Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Guess who's back, 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 back again. Sadie's back, back, back. Tell a friend, friend, friend. Guess who's back, 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 guess who's back.
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll talk some battery soccer in just a moment, but this is the final reminder I can give you for our 2021 Summer Golf Tour. Next week is the last week of the summer, week 10 of our golf tour, and the Plantation course at Edisto goes on sale 8 a.m. on Monday. Foursomes for 98.9. Final week of the summer, and these foursomes have sold out within 30 minutes every week. So, as I always tell you, set that alarm, put the reminder in the calendar, whatever you got to do. Get up early on Monday, get on the computer, head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com to purchase your foursome Monday morning starting at 8 a.m. And you can head over there for all the pertinent information in the meantime, charlestonsportsradio.com. Last week of the 2021 Summer Golf Tour. Hopefully, you've been able to take advantage throughout the summer. And whether you have or haven't, you got one more week to do so. The Plantation course at Edisto goes on sale Monday morning, 8 a.m. Foursomes for 98.9. Last week of the Summer Golf Tour. Goes quick. All right, joining us now is the head coach of the Charleston Battery, Coach Mike Anheuser, is the Charleston Battery. Coming off a tie Wednesday at home against the Pittsburgh Riverhounds, 1-1, and they head off to New Mexico for a game Monday night. Coach is with us now. Coach, good afternoon. How are you?
Good afternoon. Doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, appreciate the time as always. Take us back to Wednesday, the tie at home against the Pittsburgh Riverhounds because of the storm. I know it was played in an empty arena, but give us your breakdown as the head coach of what you saw from your team on Wednesday in the tie.
Yeah, well, you know, we jumped out to a good start. You know, they came out and moved the ball a little bit, but we caught them on the counter, and one of our rookies, Jobel Perez, you know, latched onto it and beat the keeper and put us up 1-0, which is a great thing against the Pittsburgh team who defends very well, always one of the best defensive teams in the league. And then for about 70 minutes, you know, we really defended well. We didn't create as much as we probably needed to. But, you know, that's what happens when you're playing games like that. We were holding on to the lead, and unfortunately, in the 82nd minute or 84th minute, they caught us, you know, down in the corner and got a ball in, and one of their strikers, you know, really latched on and hit a nice finish into the upper 90. And, you know, in the end, you got to take the draw. We're not happy because it would have been great to get those 3 points, especially when you're going on the road this week, you know, out west of New Mexico. So, in the end, it's a tough game. It was a difficult game. You're obviously playing at 4, and, you know, it's always going to be a battle when you're getting through the heat at that time of the day, and it's, you know, even with the storm moving in. So there was a lot of moving pieces, but our guys did tremendous and showed a lot of character.
Yeah, that's a good point. What was that like to move the game, play in the afternoon? I'm sure flashbacks to last year where, you're playing without able to have the fans. So what was that experience like here to have to move the game like that and play in some unusual circumstances?
Yeah, you know, for us, again, like you said, we dealt with it all of last year. We knew, you know, being here, you obviously have to adjust when there's storms, you know, tropical storms, hurricanes, and we got the game in. You know, we didn't want to miss another game, and obviously it was important, and it was great. So for us, it wasn't that big of a deal. You know, of course, it's always disappointing. You don't get to play in front of as many fans, but there was, a couple there. But in the end, you know, we're going to have our next home game, and it was just a matter of getting that game in and not getting a backlog of more games at the end of the season. And, again, it was, you know, something, and again, it was good. I can't complain. Obviously, we had a few guys step in, some young guys that stepped into the lineup, and they showed a lot of character and showed a lot of quality in their first performances for us. So it was good to see it from that end, too.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about those young guys because now that we're a few games into the season, you mentioned the goal that you got on Wednesday came from one of your rookies.
Yep.
So what have you seen from these young guys now that they've gotten some more games or reps under their belt here trying to help you out this year?
Yeah, you know, they've been tremendous. And, you know, sometimes you don't always get the start. You're coming in off the bench. And, you know, we've been able to get a few guys some extra minutes just because of some injuries. And the guys have stepped up and really done well. Jogel Perez is really showing that he's got a bunch of quality. And I think he's going to get more than one goal, which, you know, he showed his quality on Wednesday night. And then DZ Harmon got his first start, you know, who's with us out of Coastal. And Claudio Repetto showed some really good qualities in his work rate on the field. So I think once they get some more reps and some more minutes, they're only going to get better. So it is great to see that they did so well against a very good Pittsburgh team. And now it's really, can they take that next step and really make it even better for themselves? And, you know, every player's everybody, you know, develops at a different rate or can do things at a different pace. So we're hoping they come along a lot quicker, which they're having to, which they're doing fantastic.
9 matches into the season. As the head coach, how do you look at this team? You know, what are you pleased with so far, and what have you been preaching in practice to continue to improve on here moving forward?
Yeah, you know, we've had a lot of moving pieces. We're trying to get all that settled down, which I think we're getting to that point right now. And, you know, we had a few guys out on international duty, still have one out, AJ. You know, and once we get all those pieces in place, I think we can really push forward with, you know, trying to work on, you know, keeping the ball a little more, trying to, you know, keep our possession, you know, a little more and create some chances, you know. But right now, you know, everybody's just picking up the pieces where we are. And I'll tell you, it's coming together, and you can see it in training. You can see the confidence in training even today with the guys playing on Wednesday that the young guys are coming along at a faster pace, you know, than sometimes than they've had to. And it's very good. But once we get all the guys together, I'll tell you what, we should have a good group of players together.
The way you started the season, as we talked with Coach Mike Anheuser of the Charleston Battery, you played your first 4 games in about a 6-week span. Now it seems like the games are coming, you know, they're a little closer together now. Do you like trying to get into this rhythm or flow of playing a little more frequently, or did you like having some of that downtime to work on things between the games?
Yeah, you know, I think for players and even coaches, you want to play games because the minutes, playing minutes in games, that's different than training. You know, you can put together trainings, you know, for fitness and even in the heat and at the time. It's not the same as a game. And, you know, the players want to play those games in minutes and need to learn how to play in the game and play 90 minutes, 100 minutes, you know, depending on what it is, an extra 5 minutes because the referee adds time, you know. So it's really getting into that groove. And now, you know, we are going to have games, and now we got to get all our guys to be able to be in that groove to play those games in those minutes. So I think once we get rolling, it's going to be a better thing for us because training's good for making adjustment and changes, but games really puts you up there and showcases what players can do, and that's what they want to do most of the time.
Heading out to New Mexico to take on New Mexico United Monday night, 9:30 Eastern start here locally. You can watch the game online on ESPN Plus, as always. And an interesting matchup because I know New Mexico's head coach is Troy Lesane, who played here at the College of Charleston, is from South Carolina, and played for you with the Charleston Battery. So I imagine you must be looking forward to this matchup.
Yeah, no, it's a matchup. I talked to Troy at the beginning of the season. The ownership and the league got it done. We have a couple crossover games, and one of them is with New Mexico. And I'm sure, you know, with Troy's connection to Charleston and obviously our connection with Troy and my connection, he's been fantastic. He stepped out and, you know, from being an assistant and stepped into the head coaching role out there and has done a tremendous job, you know, and hopefully, you know, he learned a few things here, hopefully not too much, but it's going to be great, and it's great to see players, you know, move on and coaches move on and, you know, step up to the plate to do that. And it's a great thing to see. I'm proud of Troy. Zach Prince also is with their coaching staff who played at the college and was with the Battery. He's also with them. So we got a few players and even a couple players that they have, you know, were with the Battery. So it's great. And I'll tell you, we're definitely going to be competing. You know, we're friends off the field, but like everybody, you know, once you're out there, you want to get the win. And I know we want to go out there and have a great result, and I'm sure he wants to do the same.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. You know, has there been communication lately, or come Monday, once you're on the field, you give the cold shoulder? You know, how do you treat a situation like this going up against a friend?
Yeah, everybody's different. You know, I've talked to him. It hasn't been in the last 3 days, I can say that. But, you know, if he calls me, I'll talk to him. I'm sure I'll have a chat with him even when we get out there. You know, but, again, it's different, and he's the head coach now, so it's going to depend what he wants to do also. It's not just what I want to do or what I'd be able to do. So I try to let it go and see how we handle it. But I'm always happy, you know, if I grab a coffee or something with them, because we know each other so well. And even after the game, you obviously have so much respect for each other, and I have respect for him, and he's done a great job. And, you know, again, it is competition, and, you know, you want to get that W. So when we're between the white lines and or on the sideline, he's going to be competing and trying to do everything to win the game just like we are.
When you were, or as you get ready for this game Monday against New Mexico, do you ever see something either on film or in the stats or just how they play and think like, wait a minute, I think he got that from me?
Oh, Troy has a little, you know, he's a little different than me. Like, you know, he's definitely, you know, he likes, you know, a little more possession. Well, I wouldn't say more possession, but he's going to work on it a little harder. He's got some players in there. But he does do some things that are different for himself that I've picked up, that he's had success with on some free kicks and things that he knows I'm going to be aware of. But he'll probably try to change and adjust, because that's what you have to do as a coach. You have to try to do little things to your team to maybe make an adjustment that favors your team or favors your players. And I'm going to be doing the same thing, you know, with our team. And you want to try to be able to do that as a coach. So I'm not expecting him just to come out and throw his team out there. I'm going to expect him to try to adjust a little bit on the field and with free kicks and with some other things in the areas of the pitch that, you know, we'll be ready for, to be honest with you, because I've been watching.
Talking with Coach Mike Anheuser, head coach of the Charleston Battery. I know New Mexico United, they're pretty new to the league. Have you personally, have you been out to New Mexico before?
I have not been to New Mexico. So it's one place, you know, El Paso, you know, been out around that area, Colorado, you know, everywhere else. But New Mexico and Albuquerque is one place I haven't played. Even in college and as a player, I never got out there, unfortunately. So it's going to be the first time for me. About half of our players have played out in Albuquerque, either at the University of New Mexico or, you know, in the past, even in the league. So kind of asked that question today because, you know, you want to be prepared and obviously get things ready for their preparation, because you're playing Albuquerque's at altitude a little bit. So you got to, you know, make sure you keep hydrated and do the little things off the field to keep your body ready to go out there.
Are you guys, are you flying out on, like, Sunday for the game Monday?
Is that Sunday morning, yeah. We fly out early, so we'll have a good session. We've got it all planned out to have a session in the afternoon, evening, and let the guys get some rest so they kind of wake up and it adjusts them. Not really West Coast. It's only 2 hours, so it won't be too difficult. 2 hours, you know, behind is easy for us, so even if it's an 8 o'clock game, you know, it's okay. So we're going to be good playing Monday night.
Yep, 9:30 here Eastern Time. Can watch it online. Before we let you go, Coach, you know, it's kind of ironic that Wednesday, we talked about the home game Wednesday where you really couldn't play in front of many fans, but that was also when the team was able to announce that for future home games, able to open back up to full capacity for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
So before we let you go, I did want to ask you about that. What does that mean as the coach to be able to now play in a full home stadium here moving forward?
I'll tell you, you know what's great is, I mean, I can foresee it because we had – whatever the number was in our first home games, they filled the house, you know, for our sales staff and the staff and all the ownership, and everybody has done a tremendous job of pushing that. So to be able to play in front of a full house and, you know, what that number is going to be, you know, and I think, who knows, you can even go over a little bit. If we can get that, it's going to be tremendous for us. You were out there for that first game, and I think that was, 2,000. So imagine doubling that is going to be absolutely incredible. We're excited. The players are going to be excited. But we have to make sure we take it one step at a time. We're going to worry about that when it comes up next. But I know the players are excited to be playing in front of a full house. I'm sure the community's excited that we can, you know, have 100% attendance. And, you know, for all sports in general, to get back to this point is absolutely fantastic for owners and for fans and for everybody and players and coaches and everybody involved.
Yeah, it sure is. And a great environment always over there at Patriots.
Yeah.
Monday night.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it sure is. Monday night against New Mexico United on the road, 9:30 Eastern. You can catch that online. But then the Battery are back home Saturday, July 17th against Hartford Athletic. Get your tickets online, charlestonbattery.com, full capacity moving forward. Coach, appreciate the time as always. Always appreciate you joining us and wish you the best of luck Monday in New Mexico.
Thank you very much. All right, we'll see you Saturday.
Sounds good. Good luck in New Mexico. Coach Mike Anheuser, coach of the Charleston Battery. And if you see any aliens out there in New Mexico, you give me a call. You see any of these UFOs flying around. Go back to the Battery Monday night against New Mexico, the first time they're going up against New Mexico United, who joined the league, I believe, just 2019. And then last year, because of the pandemic, you know, you played the same couple of teams. And so they'll be heading out there, the Battery will, for the game Monday. And the coach will be squared up against Troy Lesane, who played at the College of Charleston. He's from South Carolina, I believe, the Columbia area. And he played for the Battery in coach's first year, 16 years ago, then was an assistant at the College of Charleston, was even an assistant with the Battery for a year during their affiliation with the Vancouver Whitecaps. And he recruited a few of the current Charleston Battery players while he was at the College of Charleston. We've had many Battery players on who played at the College of Charleston and continue their careers here in the Lowcountry. And this will be the first time that the two coaches are squaring off. So that's always fun. That's always an interesting little wrinkle in these games. Whenever you have former, you know, assistants coaching against each other, or just good friends now going up against one another, and you know, you're off the field, whatever the sport may be, off the court, off the field, off the pitch, you know, they're good friends, but hey, everyone's a competitor, and that's your enemy for a couple of hours that night. You're not sharing any secrets. You cut off communication leading up to the game. You want to beat them badly. You want the bragging rights for the next few weeks, year, whatever it may be, till you play again. And then after that, the Battery return home. I'm going to be very conflicted next Saturday, because we got Hartford Athletic coming to town from Hartford, Connecticut, taking on the Charleston Battery. Next home game for the Battery, Saturday, July 17th, so a week from tomorrow. And that'll be a 7:30 start. You can get tickets now online at charlestonbattery.com. They're back to full capacity moving forward. And how about this? The Battery also tell me that they're selling tickets for $8.43. 843 tickets for $8.43. So you just have to use the code 843 when buying online. So even better. We got full capacity. We got discounted tickets while supplies last. And we got the Battery coming back home next week to play, of all teams, the Hartford Athletic. So you can get tickets online. Use the code 843. Get your tickets online at charlestonbattery.com. 843 is the code to get the tickets for $8.43. Always appreciate Coach taking some time out to join us. Appreciate it from Coach Mike Anheuser of the Charleston Battery, the coach of the Battery. They're 9 matches in. They're 3-3-3 right now. 3 wins, 3 losses, 3 draws. I've been working on the verbiage. I've been trying to get it down in my head, right? Draw instead of tie. Pitch instead of field. Match instead of game. But I'm so, in all the other sports, right, we always say those other terms. I'm so used to saying ties, games, field, whatever it may be. But I appreciate the time from coaches always breaking it all down with us as the Battery head into that game Monday out in New Mexico. I've been to New Mexico. Yeah, I almost forgot. I've been to New Mexico a few years ago. Did not see any aliens or soccer. But I've been out there to New Mexico, and I don't know if I'll ever go back. Coming up, we were talking about the Gamecocks earlier as we get ready for the upcoming college football season. Super Dave reminded us that 7 weeks from tomorrow is the start of the college football season. It'll be here before you know it. And so I touched on the Gamecocks earlier about how they remind me of a baseball team this year. When we come back, I also want to talk about Clemson. We'll look at Clemson's FPI projections and also who the most important person of Clemson's season will be. And it's not going to be the new quarterback. We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Most important person for Clemson's football season, and it's not the new quarterback. We'll get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Good song from Dire Straits. I always love the guitar sound in that song. Hey, you ever have a problem around the house? You think, I can't fix this? don't worry, because the Canty Foundation Specialist can. Check them out. Give them a call. You can head on over to their website online, cantycanfixit.com, or give them a call at 843-484-3625. Because Canty knows how tough it can be to find a contractor that you can trust. So they offer a warranted solution and a free, no-obligation estimate for all foundation repair services. And this time of year, I keep reminding you, right? You're outside, you don't got the shoes on, you're running around barefoot, kids are out playing by the pool, people are over the house, whatever it may be. You got to protect your toes. So if you have concrete around your home that's cracked or uneven, such as a sidewalk, driveway, patio, pool deck, whatever it may be, the Canty Foundation Specialists offer the repair options you need to help you protect the look of your concrete, the value of your home, and the integrity of those little toes. Contact them for a free estimate today, cantycanfixit.com, or give them a call, 843-484-3625, the Canty Foundation Specialists. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Mike Anheuser, head coach of the Charleston Battery, as they get ready for their match Monday night out in New Mexico. First time going out there, taking on a former Battery player, now turned coach. And appreciate Coach joining us to break it all down. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as that conversation with the head man of the Battery, you can always find it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston wherever you listen to your podcasts. Go online to charlestonsportsradio.com, click on our show page and find the show on demand there. Or download our new app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Download that sucker and you can find the show on demand through the app. You can also listen live from anywhere in the world through our free app as well. ESPN Charleston in the App Store. So every morning I come in, and Bobby always gets here much earlier than me. And so he's kind enough. You know, he prints out some materials. He puts it on my desk and everything. I always come into paperwork on my desk. I appreciate it. Lets me know what's going on, what's on the schedule, what games we got tonight, what's going on locally. So I came in today, and I see this on my desk. I don't think... Yeah, that's right. Breaking news. Joe knows what's coming. I don't know if this came from Bobby. Did this come from Bobby? Is he telling me that wrestling's coming to town?
Must be, because I also had it on the console over here when I came in.
Wow. Really? So I thought this was from you. You're telling me you didn't put this on my desk?
No, I did not.
Wow, look at that. Big breaking news. WWE making their return to the Lowcountry, coming to the North Charleston Coliseum Saturday, September 18th. How about that?
I'm sure Bobby's going to be there. Tickets go on sale July 16th at 10 a.m. You'll probably see Bobby first one in line.
I guess so. I'm impressed. Yeah. I'm surprised he printed this out, put it on my desk, left it in the studio there for you. I had no idea. I figured, oh, this must have been from Joe. Every time I come in every morning, papers on the desk from Bobby. I saw this one. I thought, no way would that be included. He's telling me he is trying to give us a reason to talk wrestling. He's encouraging the wrestling talk now. I'm shocked.
I'm sure he's going to be at the Hanahan Rec Center on Sunday for the old school championship wrestling show, too.
Of course. So. I'm sure he'll be at the wrestling September 18th because, you know, South Carolina, that day they're only playing Georgia. So, I mean, who cares about that game, right? They're at Georgia September 18th. It's a night game, 7 o'clock. I'm sure the wrestling's going on at night. So
Bobby will be at the Coliseum watching the wrestling.
Yes.
But he'll have his earphones on listening to the game.
Yeah, I'm sure. I could see it now. I'm sure that's what I mean, it's only Georgia, right? Who cares about that game? South Carolina and Georgia. Rather go see some wrestling instead. And let's see, who does Clemson have on the schedule that night? September 18th. They got Georgia Tech at home. So if you're a Clemson fan. Now, that game's at 3:30, though, so perfect. You can watch Clemson on TV and then go watch some wrestling that night at the North Charleston Coliseum.
So that's what the big boss will be doing.
Yeah.
Since he's a Georgia Tech alum.
That's true. Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure he'll be at the North Charleston Coliseum there as well. And I should know this, but I go week by week. People always ask me, like, oh, who's the Citadel playing October? I have no idea. I don't even know who they're playing. Let me get through Saturday first. I go week by week, so I should know who they're playing. That may be the off week. Who are they playing? Oh, no, that's the new game they added. North Greenville, September 18th. We don't have a start time yet, but the Citadel's playing North Greenville. It is a home game. So, you know, maybe I'll watch a little Citadel football, broadcast a little Citadel football, and then make my way over to the North Charleston Coliseum on September 18th. A little bit of a unique doubleheader on Saturday, September 18th. So big news. How about that? I was shocked. I thought, no way could this come from Bobby. Someone else must have put this on my desk. I'm surprised and impressed.
Yeah, Bobby's the closet fanboy.
That's right. He is. That's what always happens. The people that are so anti something actually turn out to be, you know, the secret fans that they don't want you to know. I think that's what's going on here. Now, I was a big wrestling fan back in the 90s and then stopped following it when WCW went bankrupt and they all came together. ECW disappeared. I stopped following wrestling probably 2001, 2002. But I did go to a house show. We went to go see wrestling one night. I was home for Christmas a couple years ago. And the WWE happened to be in Hartford, Connecticut, you know, which is where I grew up. And so my dad said, like, hey, you want to go watch wrestling? And I thought, sure. I still love wrestling. I don't watch it consistently, but I still have a soft spot in my heart for wrestling. That's why we talk about wrestling every Thursday in the show. I still love the product. So I said, sure, let's go. That was a few years ago. I don't know if I was even in Charleston yet. That was within the last 5 years. We went to go see some live wrestling. And there was I don't even remember the wrestlers, but there was the main event was a steel cage match. And I've never seen a steel cage match live. I've been to a couple wrestling events. That was the only one in the last, like, 20 years. And that was pretty cool. Saw a steel cage match. I have no idea who the wrestlers were. I think John Cena may have been there that night. I think so. I think he was wrestling in that main event. And that was pretty cool. And we had pretty good seats. Wrestling's in town tonight. You want to go? I was like, sure. Whatever. I'm home on Christmas break. Got nothing else going on. Went and saw some wrestling. So September 18th, the big news today. September 18th, WWE is making their return to the North Charleston Coliseum.
Now, for a cage match, do you prefer the big blue steel cage that they use now or the chain link fence type cage that was used, you know, in Jim Crockett Promotions days and stuff like that, where they can kind of rub their faces against it and stuff like that, get some color, as they say?
I think I prefer the chain link fence, which I think was what they used that night, if I remember correctly. But I can't even tell you who wrestled, so I don't remember all that much. The only thing I remember was Elias, who I didn't even know who that was at the time. He came out and he was in the center of the ring with his guitar and he was like singing a song and he was making fun of Hartford, I think, making fun of Connecticut. And I think, if I remember correctly, like, making fun of that we don't have any sports teams or anything. That was part of it. And I thought, like, who is this guy? Is this a wrestler? What's he doing? He's putting on a concert? I had no idea who he was. I wasn't following wrestling. And that's the only thing I remember. That and the main event was a steel cage match, I think, with John Cena. I don't even know who wrestled.
Yeah, Elias. Yeah, Elias did the same thing when they were in town last time.
Oh, yeah?
Yes. I have to admit, the song was pretty funny.
It was entertaining. I didn't get like offended, right? Other people in the crowd may have been like, "Hey, you don't say that about Connecticut." I don't care. I get the bit. So it was entertaining. But I didn't know who he was because I didn't follow wrestling. And I thought, "What's going on? Where's the wrestling? We got a guy in the middle of the ring singing songs with his guitar. What happened here?" That's all I remember from being there about I don't know, probably 4.5 years ago around Christmas in Connecticut. All right, so Clemson. We were talking earlier about the Gamecocks season. And I ran through the Gamecocks FPI rankings and projections on ESPN.com. Looking at Clemson's, obviously it's a little more decisive. It's not as interesting looking at these numbers or this set of data. Now, according to ESPN's FPI, they have Clemson as the third best team in college football this year. For their projected win-loss record, they give them 11.5 victories, 1.5 losses. So you can set that as like the over-under. Do you think Clemson will lose two games this year? Right? Do you think they run the table, win the national championship? Their only loss may come in the playoff. Will that be the case? Will they lose to Georgia week one? Then maybe they do have two losses if they still make it to the playoff. But the FPI gives Clemson a 21% chance of winning out this year, and they give them a 72% chance of winning their conference. I would actually put it higher than that. Their strength of schedule is 55th this year, which takes me to the point I wanted to make, that when you look at these games, the games that Clemson has this year, there is only one game where Clemson has less than an 89% chance of winning. That, of course, would be Georgia week one. After that, the toughest game on Clemson's schedule, according to ESPN's FPI, is at Pittsburgh, October 23rd. Clemson only has an 89% chance of winning on the road, up in the cold, at Pittsburgh. Only 89% chance. Otherwise, their other games, they have a 99.9% chance to beat South Carolina State, a 96% chance to win that game against Georgia Tech, 90% against NC State, 96% against Boston College, 98% at Syracuse, 95% against Florida State, 91% at Louisville, a 96% chance to win against Wake Forest, 95% at South Carolina, and all my poor UConn Huskies. Clemson has a 99.8% chance of beating UConn at home in November. And then the one exception, of course, their toughest game on the schedule, we all know, it's Georgia week one. Neutral site against Georgia. But according to ESPN's FPI projections, Clemson now has a 71% chance of winning that game, which surprises me. A little bit higher than I would have anticipated. I would have thought it was closer to a 50-50. I would have think that Clemson would have like a 60% chance is what I would give them. I think they win the game, but I do think it's a little more of a coin flip than maybe some believe. And after that, there are no challenges on this schedule whatsoever. Maybe Clemson slips up somewhere along the way like they have a couple times in the past, but on paper, it should be nothing but blowout victories the rest of the way. But week one against Georgia, neutral site, I've said it once, I've said it a million times. Week one in football is always the biggest toss-up. And now you have to go to a neutral site, some new starters in the lineup, and you're not easing in with a South Carolina State. That's the next week. You're playing Georgia, who should be, we all believe, could very well be a top five team in the country this year. I've heard some college football analysts say that if JT Daniels is as good as advertised, if he's as good as he looked last year, maybe he's the one that could actually get Georgia over the hump and win a national championship this year. And so that's who you start with. Neutral site, new pieces, especially on offense. Most of the defense is back, but, you know, new starting quarterback starting as the guy for the first time. I know he's played before, but this is going to be the first time where he is the guy. It's on him to win a national title this year, not just to get you through the week until Trevor Lawrence comes back. No Travis Etienne in the backfield, some questions of the offensive line. But as you look towards this season for Clemson, we know that's the most important game. It's the really the only game of importance on Clemson's schedule. You assume they win all the others and do so pretty easily. But what happens week one against Georgia? And as you go to a neutral side against a top team like that, the focus may be, and I'm sure it will be when it comes to the broadcast, the buildup, probably will be on the quarterbacks. Georgia starting JT Daniels, who for all intents and purposes is a new starter. He played four games last year at the end of the year. But same, this is the first time that he is going to be the guy. Same at DJ. Last year, they were kind of filling a role. JT Daniels stepped in, finished the season. DJ stepped in when Trevor Lawrence couldn't play. But this year, they are the guys. They are the stars. I'm sure that'll be the big talking point week one. Right? Two new, essentially starting quarterbacks. Who's going to play better? Who will be better on the bigger stage? But I don't think the focus is on the quarterback position. I think more importantly for Clemson, this year, the most important member of this program for 2021 is Brent Venables. And I think it all comes back to that game against Georgia. Because the rest of the schedule, I don't care about. They're going to win all those games. Defense will look good. They'll blow out those teams. They'll win easily. They'll run through the ACC. Their whole season, it may sound real simple, but I think it is this simple. I think Clemson's whole season comes down to week one against Georgia. We can shrink it down, focus in, zero in on Georgia. The rest of the schedule, I don't care. They're going to beat all those teams. Again, maybe there's one slip-up. That's what you have to guard against. But otherwise, if you come out and play passionate football every week, if you're locked in as a Clemson, as a team, if Clemson's locked in every week, you don't have to play your best. Just don't play terribly. You come out and you play well enough, you're going to win every one of those games. Except Georgia is the question mark. And for me, the concern isn't so much DJ. The concern for me would be Venables and the defense. Now, Clemson is returning 9 of 11 starters on defense. But this is the same defense that we saw the last 2 years when they've gone up against the big boys. The last two times, things did not look good. Right? Whether it was Ohio State, whether it was LSU, now you're going up against Georgia. And sure, maybe they're not on that same level. But JT Daniels is expected to be one of the best quarterbacks in the country. Phil Steele, this preview magazine, has JT Daniels, I think, in the top three. I think it's him, Sam Howell, and Matt Corral are his three All-American picks this year. He's all in on JT Daniels. Most people are. And so if Daniels is as good as we believe he will be this year, if Georgia's offense is as tough as we think it could be this year, week one, neutral site, still getting into the flow of the season, and the defense has been battered in the last matchups against some of these big boys, how will they fare week one? Because DJ could play as great of a game as he wishes. Even factor in that game against Notre Dame last year in which DJ played really well. But the defense, right, couldn't stop a nosebleed. And we know this is the trend in which football is moving, college football these days. Right? I mean, Nick Saban is the obvious example with Alabama. No longer is it about this dominant defense. It's more about a dominant offense, in fact. So if you go up against Georgia, I'm sure DJ is going to play fine. I'm sure Clemson's offense will look fine. I'm sure they'll score points. Will the defense be good enough against JT Daniels? Will they be good enough to win a game like this? Because you look at their last few matchups, even Notre Dame at Notre Dame, right? Ohio State, 2 years ago in the playoff. When they go up against some of the better teams in the country, That defense has not looked the same. And this isn't just a Clemson problem. It's an issue throughout college football. But for Clemson, for all the talent they had on offense, right, a large strength has always been, of course, Venables and the job he's done defensively against some big-time quarterbacks or teams. And if they don't do well against Georgia, and if JT Daniels, say, lights up Clemson and they lose and the defense doesn't look good, that'll be just another example. Just the latest in line of games you could point to that the defense got shredded by some sort of high-potent offense. And whatever they do from then on out would be irrelevant to me. Because, again, based on the schedule, right, all of these ACC teams, South Carolina State, I don't care. The defense, I'm sure, will look great the rest of the season. But if they don't look great that first week against Georgia, that will be the biggest concern for them heading into a potential playoff matchup. And if you lose to Georgia with this schedule, which with Georgia on the schedule is 55th in the country, according to ESPN's FPI, remove Georgia from this schedule? Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's got to be, quite frankly, one of the worst in terms of strength of schedule. And there's only so much Clemson can do. I mean, they chose to play Georgia at a neutral site. Most teams wouldn't do that. But otherwise, the ACC, the schedule, right? You can only play who's in your conference, and the conference isn't very good. But outside of Georgia, if you lose that game and the defense doesn't look good, you won't have any opportunities the rest of the regular season to make up for it, to prove that that was the outlier, to prove that actually this is a really good defense. Because are we really going to be like, well, you know, they didn't play well against Georgia, but the defense looked really good against insert team here, right? Against Boston College, against UConn. It's like, okay, they should. I think the whole season, obviously, depends on week one against Georgia. And that game will come down to Venables and the defense. How will they fare against another one of these big boys and JT Daniels? I'm not as concerned about DJ. I'm more concerned about the other side of the football. And if Clemson slips up and still can make the playoff, it won't be until the playoff that they can try to change that reputation, that they can try to do something about it. Because if the defense doesn't look good week one and then shines the rest of the year, you'll hear the, well, it was week one, they were just getting situated, or JT Daniels played really well, this or that. But I would take more away from that Georgia game than the rest of the schedule, because you're going up against B teams. You're going up against JV teams the rest of the year. But what happens when you go up against the best of the best? And the last couple of years, it hasn't looked good for that defense. And if it doesn't look good once again against Georgia, now you're building that picket fence. You're starting a trend. You're thinking, this is more than just a coincidence, or this is more than just one bad game. This keeps happening. And come playoff time, if you still make it there, depending on what happens with that Georgia game, right, that'd be the biggest concern rolling in. It won't be the quarterback. It won't be, is DJ good enough to win a big game? It'll be, is this defense good enough to slow down whoever you may match up with in the playoff? Georgia, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Alabama, whoever it may be, the top teams in the country will all be there on the backs of their offense. Brent Venables and that defense, to me, the most important part for Clemson this year. And obviously the most important game is Georgia. We were talking yesterday. I ran through it quickly because we were short on time. But the most impactful games of the college football season. If you were to ask me, I would have thought it'd be Clemson-Georgia. But ESPN FPI's rankings ranked the top 15 most impactful games of the college football season, and they put that game number 2, which does show how huge of a game this will be to start the season, Clemson and Georgia. It's going to be, they believe, the second most impactful game on determining a champion this year, or at least the playoff field. While we have a moment, let me run through this list a little bit slower because we breezed through it yesterday. But as I mentioned, Alabama and Texas A&M is number 1 on their list. That's week 6. Because based off of last year, those are two top 5 teams, and you know the top 2 teams in that division and fighting for a playoff spot, it could come down to that game against one another. Georgia-Clemson, as mentioned, is number 2. The number 3 most impactful game is Oklahoma and Texas, also week 6. For all we know, that could help decide the Big 12. The 4th most impactful game, Georgia-Florida. That's week 9. That's always a huge game every year. It's usually billed as the game to have the opportunity to try to beat Alabama in the SEC title game. The 5th most impactful game this year, according to ESPN's FPI, is Iowa State-Oklahoma in week 12. Iowa State, many believe, could be a playoff team this year. Those should be the 2 best teams in the Big 12. That will be a big game in week 12. The 6th most impactful game, Alabama-Florida, week 3. A rematch of last year's SEC title game. The 7th most impactful game this year, Penn State-Ohio State, week 12. The 8th most impactful game, Oregon and Ohio State, week 2. Let's see what Oregon's made of from the Pac-12. The 9th most impactful game, Notre Dame-Wisconsin, week 4. two teams, the two fringe playoff teams, that whichever team loses, that could seal their fate. The 10th most impactful game, Texas and Iowa State, Week 10, circling back to the top teams of the Big 12. 11th on this list, North Carolina and Notre Dame. Again, going back to those two fringe playoff teams, that's Week 9. 12th most impactful is Georgia and Auburn in Week 6. Week 6 is shaping up to be the biggest week of the season. Georgia-Auburn, you also have Alabama-Texas A&M that week, and Oklahoma-Texas. That'll be a lot of fun in the middle of October. The 13th most impactful game, Week 1, Alabama-Miami. Let's see what Miami's made of. A lot of people think that they'll be that second-tier team this year, a top-10 program. They take Alabama on Week 1. Talk about jumping into the fire. 14th on the list of most impactful games, according to ESPN's FPI, Notre Dame-Virginia Tech also in that Week 6. I'm surprised to see that one on the list because I don't think Virginia Tech will play a role this year. And number 15 on the list of most impactful games, Ohio State-Michigan at the end of the year. Obviously, always a big game, and if Michigan fans have their way, that will be a huge game in deciding or helping to try to decide the Big Ten. On paper, you would hope that that's a matchup between the two best teams in the conference. We'll see if Michigan can hold up their end of that bargain. But those are the 15 most impactful games of the college football season. Number two, Clemson, Georgia. And I think that game, and therefore the Clemson season, comes down to Venables and the defense. More so than the new running back, more so than the new quarterback, or any other replacements that Clemson has to make on either side of the football. It'll come down to the defense, and if they can slow down an offense like Georgia and JT Daniels. Because recent history has shown they have struggled against those types of offenses. Coming up, should the Olympics actually go on later on this month? We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up Hour 2 here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Coming up, should the Olympics actually go on as scheduled or planned later on this month? Set to begin actually 2 weeks from today in Tokyo. We'll get to that coming up. Hey, if you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand, ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Find the show on demand online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Or download our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. And download that app today to listen live or even to find the shows on demand. I saw this. Drew Locke, quarterback of the Broncos, was driving through Kansas. And a lug nut came flying across the median. He was on the highway. It came flying. I don't know. Did it come off the car while they're driving, I guess? And it went flying across the median and into the windshield of Drew Locke. Now, you can see the photos online because Trooper Ben tweeted about it, and he tweeted these photos, and it's like halfway through the windshield. It didn't go all the way through the windshield, fortunately, but it's about halfway through the windshield. That's how deep it impacted into the windshield, and obviously the whole thing, you get that spider web all around it, and the windshield's cracked, and Drew Locke, fortunately, is safe and okay and everything, but that's kind of scary. You're driving down the highway. Something comes flying from the other side of the highway, and it goes right into the windshield. It's a lug nut. Now, knock on wood, I haven't had a situation like that, but I can only imagine you're driving and probably at a high speed. And if you're paying attention, I don't know if you could see the lug nut. I mean, those things aren't big, and it's moving so quickly, and you're moving quickly. It comes flying into the windshield. That could cause an accident. Could cause you to freak out. You yank the wheel as you're like, what the heck just happened? So fortunately, Drew Locke is okay. Now, I've never had a situation like that, but I do remember as a kid, my father and my brothers and I, we were going to a basketball game, and something fell from the overpass, like a walking bridge, if I remember correctly, overhead while we were on the highway, and it came down and it landed on my dad's windshield, and glass like went everywhere. It went on to my brother that was sitting shotgun. I was in the backseat. I'm the youngest. Glass landed on him and everything, and I don't remember if it was intentional or not. Like, there were kids up there, I remember, and I don't know if they dropped something, like intentionally, dropped something on a car, or if it just happened to fall and it was just a coincidence, kids were walking by. I think it may have been intentional, which is obviously very dangerous. You should never do such a thing. But, and you know, memories are funny. You think back to something, and over the years you alter the memory or you create your own memory, that the memory you have in your head, the picture that you can picture, right, the image you have in your head is actually just manufactured by what you believe happened and isn't exactly how things went down. So maybe that's the case here, but I almost feel like, if I remember correctly, it was like in slow motion where you knew like it was going to happen, but not enough that you could do something, like to swerve out of the way. You could see this falling object heading down to the windshield, and that was kind of scary. And that kind of took the fun out of the night. We were going to go see, I think, Ray Allen. We were going to go see a basketball game. I think that may have been the same night that Ray Allen ran out the back door and jumped in a limo to avoid all the fans. That's another story. That may all have been the same night in Connecticut. Anyways, I saw that yesterday. I thought, that's crazy. Now that's what you have to worry about, driving on the road? And not just things, objects in the road, other drivers, now lug nuts flying off of cars. That's like Final Destination stuff. Lug nuts flying off of cars on the other side of the highway coming through your windshield. Drew Locke, quarterback of the Broncos. Fortunately, he's okay. The Olympics are supposed to begin 2 weeks from today in Tokyo, July 23rd, and they're scheduled to run until August 8th. Yesterday, the Olympic Committee announced that no fans are going to be allowed. Now, originally, it was only going to be local fans. The original plan was that, you know, like nobody from this country could travel over there to go watch the events. And they said only local fans. But then they made the determination yesterday, or in the last 24, 36 hours, that no fans whatsoever. So this is going to take us back to the bubble, right? Take us back to last year in the sports world at the height of the pandemic, where you're going to be playing these empty places with no fans. There have been protests going on in various places saying just cancel the Olympics outright. And I've had questions about this since day one, since the plan to hold the Olympics this summer. You know, I was all for continuing sports, but here the Olympics are a little bit different because you're talking about people from all different countries, and now even at this point, you talk about they're not in a position where they can have fans. For one reason or another, Tokyo or Japan, they're not in as good of a spot as even we are here. I mean, the reason why they can't have fans is because they're going into like more of a lockdown now. I believe it's only 15% of people have been vaccinated there, I think, from the data I saw. And they're obviously not in as good of a spot. They had to declare a state of emergency because of COVID and then therefore said no fans will be allowed. Originally, 10,000 local fans were going to be admitted to the Olympics. And my whole question about this, and maybe it's the type of deal that the train has already left the station. There's too much going on. It can't be moved or it can't be canceled. You might as well just go with it. If you cancel it, that's it. We're not going to have the Olympics for another 4 years, and you know maybe you don't want to miss it. I just wonder if it's worth all the trouble and the potential concern to send all these athletes from different countries to Japan where they don't have as good of a handle on it. And I'm sure a lot of our athletes are vaccinated, but then you're going to get all these athletes together, and at the Olympic Village, I don't know what they're going to do for like the whole social distancing, and then they're going to go back to other countries. And they're going to be holding these events. It's becoming a TV event. Now, there's going to be nobody there for the Olympics. I'm sure it's going to feel very odd. I think that's part of the idea of it, that you have these different countries competing, but you can also have, you know, fans from all other countries will go to the events and see it and experience it, and that's taken away. It's going to be like back in the day. That's how the Olympics, before sports on TV became such a big deal, you used to watch it like on tape delay. I think they still have to do that because there's so many sports going on. Right, but you'd watch something that night that happened like 12 hours early, and that was before the internet. You didn't know the results, and it's like it was live. Now, same, it's just going to be a TV event. It's all going to be about sitting around the TV. Okay, what happened today at the Olympics? I'm not the biggest Olympics person to begin with. So maybe that's where I come from. But I almost feel like just forget it. Move on. Let's try it again in 4 years. It's not worth all the trouble. No fans can be there. They're struggling still with COVID. People from all over the world showing up there for the event in 2 weeks. Still doesn't feel like they're ready for it. We'll see what it's like. Hour 3 next. More Midday Show on ESPN Radio.